chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to be playing a clip here from Democracy Now! With an interview that was provided with Seymour Hersh. And he's a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter, and he reports on the Nord Stream blow up of that pipeline going into Germany from Russia. And he reveals and exposes that the United States with an ultra secret mission went in there and did the job and blew the pipeline up. So here we go. With a clip, and Seymour Hersh is speaking about his investigation and the results of what he came up with.
The question inside the committee, and it included the usual CIA, NSA, Treasury Department, State Department, you name it, and they met in the secret office building in the across the street from the White House, the executive office building. The option was, you want us to do something kinetic, or something not kinetic. In other words, not kinetic would be more sanctions, or something kinetic would be, you know, taking out the pipeline, as had been thought about. And our answer came pretty quickly. I would guess Victoria Nuland's statement that you mentioned came actually before the president's. It came in late January of last year. And that statement came, at that time, I think the committee involved, a lot of sophisticated people in the intelligence and operations community, concluded you could do it, and the White House was told it was possible. I think that led to the comments, which really, of course, made the people on the inside go half crazy, because it was supposed to be completely covert. But at that place, as I wrote, it was simply described as a classified operation. None of the rules of reporting to Congress were involved. And so they began their planning. They went to Norway, which is a great ally of ours. Norway was one of the original signers of the 1949 NATO treaty. I think 19 nations were involved then. And Norway is a great ally. We have spent, I write about this in some detail in the article, hundreds of millions, probably more than closer to a billion or more, upgrading facilities. Norway has a 1,400-mile border along the Atlantic coast that goes from Oslo in Europe all the way up north it runs into the Russian border in above the Arctic Circle. So we put a lot of facilities up north there. Synthetic aperture radar, which costs a fortune to monitor the Russian nuclear sites around, and also their new military activities around there up in the other side of the peninsula, in the Kola Peninsula. So they're just our guys, and they're also great at doing underwater stuff. And so that's what happened. We did a plan with them. We had to clear it with Sweden and Denmark. I'll leave it to them to decide whether that they were accepted the explanation we were doing exercises in the Baltic Sea for the hell of it. But so far, I haven't seen much from either of them. And, you know, it's a tiresome game to me. And so what happens is, when I do my story on Substack, I wouldn't even think, I'm embarrassed to say it after all those wonderful years I had at the New York Times, I wouldn't even think you'd take a story like this to the New York Times. They've decided that the Ukraine war is going to be won by Ukraine, and that's what its readers get, and so be it. That's their call. I just did my reporting, and the miners came from a very facility in a little small town in Florida, and the mining community in the Navy is very secret, and they just do their business. They don't talk. That was perfect people to get, and they practiced it, And under, as you said, there was a major exercise every summer by the Sixth Fleet, which American Sixth Fleet out of Italy, which controls also has the operational rights in the Baltic Sea. Baltic Sea is a huge place. The pipelines we're talking about, Nord Stream 1, which came alive in 2011, and Nord Stream 2 was actually done, but the Germans that are ready to pump has 750 miles. And they go straight from Russia, which is loaded with all kinds of gas. They're in Siberia. They have enormous reserves directly into Germany. And I can tell you, Nord Stream 1 was a godsend for the German economy and Western Europe. They produced so much gas at such low prices that the German government was actually able to resell some of the gas the Russians were providing at a profit without Russia objecting. And so the German economy is huge. It's booming. You know, the cars we know about, Germany has the largest chemical company in the world, BASF. And everybody's, right now, it's hell to pay. It's gotten very cold there. There's a lot of anger. And anyway, the purpose.
I wanted to ask you, in terms of the lack of a, it always seemed to me when the claims were that potentially Russia had sabotaged its own pipeline, that it was ludicrous to think that that would be so, that they would invest so much money in pipelines and then bomb them themselves. But I'm interested in the lack of press attention since the sabotage occurred, and also the lack of congressional attention. I think back to the CIA's mining of the Managua harbors back in the early 1980s under the Reagan administration, when the conservative Republican head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Barry Goldwater, objected and raised concerns that this was a covert operation where Congress was not notified. And then, of course, Congress cut off aid to the Contras. As a result, there was an International Court of Justice ruling against the United States. But in this case, this kind of sabotage, the media seems not to be at all interested in finding out what happened here, as you have, and Congress, there's no one in Congress that's been raising questions.
You listened to the newscast that we just heard as the show opened. One horrible event after another. I think the world's taken a very bizarre turn. I also, it doesn't matter what I think. There's no question there's been a polarization of the press since Trump got in. We're now on two sides, you know, right, left, Democrat, Republican, however you describe it. If you watch Fox News, you don't watch MSNBC, et cetera, et cetera. And if you read the New York Times, you're not going to get what the right winger, you know, the conservatives have been after the New York Times and Washington Post and their quote unquote liberal view. So we've got a polarization going. And at this time, we've got a president, a Democratic president, that has done some good stuff domestically. But I can tell you, I'm not understanding the total commitment to Ukraine. And I'm not understanding what I'm reading, because obviously I have access to a lot of people who see things. I've been doing this, Amy, and I've been doing this, writing about COVID activities for, am I that old? 300 years. Anyway, the bottom line is the stories I've been getting about the war, particularly beginning in fall, and that's what gets interesting, have been pretty dire. The Russians, I think the end is just a question of time. Right now it's a question of how many more people Zelensky wants to kill of his own people. It's going to be over. What happened is the plan was to put the bomb, and I can't answer your philosophical question about why Congress isn't doing anything anymore. Congress is pretty much polarized just as much. And there's also an enormous continuing of hatred of all things Putin in this country, which is foreign policy disagreements are one thing, but it's very personal here. And that's not useful. But anyway, I don't think there's any chance that Putin wants to take over Europe. I don't think he wants to have Ukraine tamed, but he's not interested in doing anything more. But I may be in a minority about that. Anyway, what happens is there was an exercise in June, and it was supposed to the bombs were put in there under the cover of a NATO exercise. There were a lot of different countries running around with divers and blowing up things. It was an exercise to go find and chase mines. There never had been one before. It actually was whoever in the CIA or the other agencies that thought this up should get a bow because it was pretty ingenious. So in that exercise, the divers went down, did what they were trained to do. They're very good. C4, a couple hundred, whatever the weight is, bombs enough to blow up most cities, most buildings in Washington, and maybe some in New York anyway. They did their job, but the president at the last minute hesitated because he was afraid blowing it up right after the exercise would put the finger at us. And then he wanted permission to do it any time, and that caused an enormous trouble in the team. The team was, you know, people are sophisticated in the intelligence services. I know we have cliches about them. We see the movies about them. And the bottom line is this made sense to them. Blowing up a pipeline, blowing up a pipeline owned by, it's actually owned by a division of Gazprom owns 51%. That's all the Russian oligarchs. 49% of the Nord Stream 1 are owned by four business groups in the Western Europe who farm out the oil. Anyway, they saw the threat as being valid. And if you wanted to do it during an exercise, well, okay. But in September, late September, they got the word. You know, they fixed it so he could, but then they thought it was, I don't know what they thought, but I don't think they thought in late September he would blow up the main pipeline, Nord Stream 2, which is a new one that had been just built, and it had been sanctioned. It had gas in it. That's why so much leaks. 750 miles of methane gas were sitting in it, but it had been sanctioned by the German government. And so when he did that, here's what Biden did, and this is what I think the ultimate point of the story and why so many people, even the intelligence community, are very troubled by it. What he did is he said, I'm in a big war with Ukraine. It's not looking good. I want to be sure I get German and West European support, and I know winter's coming, and if it's going to be bad, I don't want the Germans to say we got to check out because we're getting massacred. We'll be massacred with no cheap fuel. And our economy will go bonkers. We're going to check out and we're going to open up the gas line, which they could do. So he took away that option. And what that has done, as you know, America has been talking about ever since the first pipeline, Nord Stream 1, came online in 2011. And it was, there were years before it was being built. This goes back to the Bush-Cheney years. And as you know, I did a lot of reporting for The New Yorker on those people. That particular gaggle. Anyway, and at that time they began to talk about the threat of gas, the threat of oil, cheap energy for Europe, would always seen as a threat to make Europe be more palatable or more willing to trade with Russia. We always wanted to isolate Russia. This has been a theme of the last decades.
Simon, can I ask you also there are several people, obviously you've gotten criticism at times for many of your exposés, but there are some people who are saying that this particular exposé does not have a whole lot of documentation, that it essentially relies on one source one internal source, anonymous source of yours. How do you respond to those criticisms that this is much less documented than previous exposés of yours?
I'll get to that, but let me finish my thought, because it's a very important thought. The fear was Europe would pass away, walk away from the war. And now what he's done, and you have to lift it up a little bit. There you go. There. Now what he's done is he's told Europe, you're second rate. And I think the consequences of this for the Europeans are going to be horrific. They really, this has cut into the notion that they could depend totally on America, even in a crisis. And I think it's going to undercut NATO, which I always found to be supremely useless. But certainly the European countries are going to be – I know people that are paying five times as much now for electricity. People are paying three or four times more for gas. There's not enough of it. It's very expensive. It's colder now than it was in the fall. They had a light fall because of climate change, if you want to believe it or not. And anyway, I think the consequences politically for us are enormous. I think the reason that Biden – and his people in the White House, have denied the story and continue to deny it and get accepted by some of the press, my old newspaper, the New York Times. I don't know why they're not doing more reporting on this instead of relying on a denial and walking away from the story. Ditto for the Washington Post. I think the consequences politically for us in the long run, looking at even potential some countries walking out of NATO, if that's what he thinks, that our being cold is less important than him keeping a war going that he's not going to win, it strikes me. As for the source question, I've been doing this so long. I'm not bothered by the fact that the government attacks me and that my old newspaper, the New York Times, hasn't written a word about it. I find it sort of, that's where we are. That's why people like me are in Substack, self-publishing thing. I don't have to worry about censorship or second thoughts. But I don't talk about sources. I just I'm lucky. I've had for 20 or 30 or 40 years people inside who not only are faithful to what they're doing, but also are not afraid to be critical of it. And so that's the kind of source that, reporters, dream about. And I've had people like that forever, and I still do. And so there's been a lot of criticism. One of the things is,
none of the mainline or mainstream reporters are reporting on this blow-up that we were behind it. And they're citing that Seymour Hersh's article only had one deep state, you could say, source. So he's being condemned and criticized by the mainline press in this story. So our next thing, we've got a couple of other stories, too, to cover this week. And one is the objects that were shot down. Now they're saying they were balloons, and then at one time they were reported to be objects. So that's awful puzzling, isn't it? And then also there was Ohio train derailment with toxic chemicals. And we're going to cover that next with two or three different clips from different sources. The source we're going to cover with this Ohio derailment and so forth is Greg Reese has an overview of it, and then we'll go with Tucker Carlson and some other reporters that covered it from different sources. So here we go with Greg Reese and what he had to say, and we'll follow up with what Tucker had, hazardous material expert on his program. So here we go with Greg Reese.
In the movie Knowing, the news reported a major oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Tonight in the Gulf of Mexico, an explosion on a soon-to-be decommissioned oil rig triggered a fire which burned for 3 hours before it was extinguished. Officials don't yet know the exact cause of the explosion, but believe a malfunction in the cooling system may have been at fault. Due to the prompt response of the rescue unit, the structure was evacuated with no loss of life.
A year later, the Deepwater Horizon exploded. 6 months before 9/11, a Lone Gunman episode showed us the World Trade Center being targeted by a hijacked passenger plane.
Corner of Liberty in Washington. Where did that happen?
World Trade Center. We're going to crash the plane into the World Trade Center.
And last year's film, White Noise, was about a train wreck that poisons a small town in Ohio. This is the very same story now playing out in real life. Within a year of White Noise's release, the actual event occurs in real life, in Ohio, in Texas, and in Michigan. This is known as predictive programming, and its purpose is to psychologically trick the minds of the masses into accepting major traumatic events that would otherwise be resisted. In the book Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, Michael Hoffman describes a mind control technique known as the revelation of the method. And he writes that when the revelation of the method is performed in a veiled manner, accompanied by certain occult signs and symbolic words, and elicits no meaningful response of opposition or resistance from the target. It is one of the most efficacious techniques of psychological warfare and mind rape. Sarah Elkhaldy of the Alchemist YouTube channel does an excellent job of explaining all this. According to Elkhaldy, there is a law of nature in this universe that compels the dark occult to first gain our consent before trespassing against us, because they believe this protects them from the natural laws of cause and effect. They offered, and we accepted, so it's all fair. A lack of response to an action is often taken as an approval of that action. And there is an old Latin proverb that says, "He who is silent when he ought to have spoken and was able to, is taken to agree." Silence is considered by many to be a form of consent. And so it is through a veiled performance of the revelation of the method technique that these dark occultists believe they are gaining our consent, what we know as predictive programming. With predictive programming, the minds of the masses are impregnated with visuals of a major event before it happens. This is done through all forms of media and can be very subtle so that nobody notices. But the subconscious mind notices everything and can easily be programmed through repetition. And so these controllers repeat whatever it is that they want us to accept as reality. Because these images are delivered to us through entertainment, they elicit no meaningful response of opposition or resistance, and so we accept them, subconsciously. And when the event happens in real life, it is already familiar and acceptable to us, as if that's just the way it is. It's a mind trick, and it works by keeping everyone locked in a spectator state. This causes what is known as paradigm blindness, which is when a person is incapable of seeing any reality other than what they've already been exposed to by the media. This paradigm blindness will cause a person to get emotionally triggered whenever confronted with an alternative point of view that they have not been programmed to accept. It's a very powerful mind trick, and the solution is quite simple. We need to stop living as spectators of someone else's reality. We need to start creating our own reality, and we need to remember how to say no, because they offer it to us, and we accept it. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Next up is Tucker Carlson interviewing a hazardous materials expert. And boy, this is really unnerving. Those people there, they better be very careful about water and everything else. That whole area has been contaminated. So here we go with Tucker Carlson with a short 4 or 5 minute interview with a hazardous materials expert.
How bad is this? I mean, it does take some experience with the chemistry to really know that. Sil Caggiano is an expert in this. He's a hazardous waste authority. He says the town of East Palestine has effectively been nuked. He joins us tonight to explain what that means. So I appreciate your coming on. How do you, having spent your life assessing things like chemical spills, how do you assess the condition of East Palestine tonight?
It's very troublesome. These poor individuals, through no fault of their own, became victims of systemic failures within the transportation rail transportation system, and it manifested itself in this mushroom cloud that they had to experience in their town. One of the reasons why I made the comment about, we nuked a town with chemicals is because there was somebody from Darlington, Pennsylvania, who was videoing the cloud that had went over his property, and you could see fallout coming out of the cloud going onto his property. And I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, it reminds you of one of those apocalyptic shows where the nuclear fallout's coming out. And I thought about it, and I says, well, yeah, we basically did nuke a whole town just to get a railroad going, back in service. And earlier on, I got involved in this because news media were not being told the truth. Days into this, no consist was available. They didn't know what they had. And, that flies in the face of logic. If you're going to mitigate a problem, if you're going to have your fire department and other, you know, responding teams take care of it, you should know what the heck you've got. And it got to the point where they were showing me pictures of train cars, the local media, and I was identifying what was in based on UNID numbers or train car numbers. And when they told me their plan, you know, at that point you had a few cars burning. They had unmonitored hand lines there keeping the tankers cool. And then I find out that they're pulling the unmonitored hand lines keeping the tankers cool. I said, well, that's just going to cause the tanker cars to heat up, which they did. And then they announced that one was very near catastrophic failure. And I said, well, if they don't put water back on it, it's going to continue to heat up, and it's going to what's called a blevy, and it's going to damage other containers. And then I was told, no, they're going to detonate all these cars so that it doesn't happen. I could tell you, Mr. Carlson, I've been looking at rail incidents over and over because in Youngstown, Ohio, there's three rail lines that run through our town. So as a chief and as a instructor, I trained my guys to anticipate stuff. And I would go case study after case study after case study, coming up with different scenarios just to keep it going. And I've never once in 39 years ever heard of them blowing up train cars, right, dumping all the chemicals into a trench and lighting them on fire. I was dumbfounded. Yeah. And, you know, when you lit this stuff on fire, you were creating phosgenes, you were creating hydrogen chlorides, you created this plume, and up in this plume was all the incomplete combustion products of everything that was there. Stuff, if you looked at the guy's video, stuff is precipitating down into people's property. There's a lot of questions, and the answers came slow. And, you know, first you get, well, now we found vinyl chlorides in the water. Well, yeah, no joke. You're going to find that. It seemed like everything was drips and dribbles. Instead of, one of the things I learned is you tell the truth, you tell it all, you tell it first, and you tell them how you're going to solve the problem. And none of that was forthcoming. And I began to worry about, what the end result with this was going to be. They had evacuated 1 mile, and I was telling the media they better do like 1.5, 2 miles. Well, subsequently after that, they went to 2 miles. And then within a few minutes, they were bringing everybody back. And that was pretty much just in time to open up the rails. And there was no testing. There's got to be some plan going forward in this cleanup and recovery to test.
Yeah. I mean, if you find asbestos in your building, you contain and remove it. You don't blow it into the next county. It just seems self-evidently insane. Syl, I appreciate your coming on tonight. That was really, really interesting and sad. Thank you.
Up next is what Tulsi Gabbard had to say about some of these things that have been going on, like the Ohio, derailment and just a lot of other things. But here is Tulsi Gabbard up with her views and her opinions.
Joining me now is Tulsi Gabbard, former congresswoman and presidential candidate and Army reservist. Tulsi, thanks for being with us tonight. How many Americans really are going to have to suffer before there is some type of accountability within this administration for its repeated failures? Failure after failure. No one ever gets fired except that guy who stole the lady's luggage.
And that right there is the tragedy here, Laura. At this point, none of us should be surprised at their lack of care and compassion, even after this disaster, for the people there in Palestine, Ohio, or those who are facing similar disasters across the country. They have shown us already that they do not care about us. They don't respect us so much that they think we're stupid and continue to lie to us and make up stories to cover their own backside. They could have taken action to prevent this. You look at the corporate side. You look at Norfolk Southern. They make billions of dollars every year. We should be asking from them, hey, why is it that you're still running unsafe, archaic technology in your train systems? Ask the Biden administration, hey, you knew. Pete Buttigieg said, oh, well, there's 1,000 trains that derail every year. If you know that, what are you doing about it? What could you have done to potentially prevent this absolute catastrophe, putting the lives of these families, their loved ones, their kids, their pets, their animals at risk here? And that's really the question that we need to ask of those who are responsible. They're so arrogant. They think that they're special. They're above the law. They're above reproach. They're above accountability. They clearly don't care about us. They think they can get away with anything. We have to demand more. We have to demand this accountability. We have to demand that those who are in these positions are actually doing their job to take care of the American people. A lot of this reminds me a little bit of the opioid crisis, Laura, where you've got all these big pharmaceutical companies making a lot of money off the lives and suffering of the American people. How many of them are in jail right now? I can't think of a single one. And so these people at Norfolk Southern, people in the Biden administration, they look to that and they think, hey, we're going to get away with this without a scrape on our back. And we cannot allow that to happen. We can't.
Now, Buttigieg criticized Trump for some of his deregulatory moves. In this case, they didn't even apply to what was happening in this train. But the Department of Transportation's most recent regulatory agenda, which lists all planned, proposed, and final rules, does not include the ECP braking rule, which everybody's been talking about. Again, they invoke it now, but it's not something they ever have talked about before or even attempted to pass via regulation.
Yeah, you know what's interesting when you played Pete Buttigieg's or pointed out his comment that, well, you know, we're doing our best with what we are allowed to do or permitted to do. When it's convenient for them and their agenda, they'll pass executive orders. They'll get, you know, the ATF or some other department to, you know, pass what is essentially a law to make the changes that they want. But now, again, instead of doing the right thing, taking ownership and taking responsibility and saying, hey, we screwed up, here's what we should have done, and here's what we're going to fix it. Instead, again, they're making up the rules as they go along because they really only care about themselves. Pete Buttigieg only cares about himself and whatever his ambitions are in the future. And this just, it hurts my heart for all of those who are watching at home who live along rail lines in this country, who are concerned for the safety and well-being of their family the next time a train goes by, and they've got to sit there and wonder, is what is in those rail cars? Will I and my family be safe, or will we be the next ones who are suffering like our fellow Americans are in Palestine, Ohio today?
Well, Tulsi, if there wasn't a media outcry, albeit a little bit late, about this, do you think they would have even, I mean, really done much at all? It seems like they were, as I said in the angle, fairly unfazed by this.
They would not, and this is not a guess. We know that they would not because they are barely doing anything right now. Throwing a few pennies at these families who are suffering and worried if they're going to have long-term cancer is such a freaking insult to them. So, no, if you and others were not drawing the spotlight on them and their hypocrisy and their conflict of interest and their selfishness, these families would be even worse off than they are today.
Tulsi, great to see you tonight. Thank you so much.
Next up is a clip about Don Lemon, and he was talking about Haley being over her prime, far beyond her prime. And so he's gotten a lot of flack on it, and I think he's going to be, they're going to dismiss him from the network. But here we go with a report on Fox about the Don Lemon controversy.
The dumbest man in America is back. Don Lemon diving headfirst into a hornet's nest of controversy while offering up his hot take on age in politics comes as Dems privately freak out on whether Joe Biden is too old to run for re-election, fearing a Kamala nomination would be worse. Presidential candidate Nikki Haley pushing this idea.
In the America I see, the permanent politician will finally retire. We'll have term limits for Congress and mandatory mental competency tests for politicians over 75 years old.
Don stepping on a landmine while responding to that.
This whole talk about age makes me uncomfortable. I think it's the wrong road to go down. She says people, you know, politicians or something are not in their prime. Nikki Haley isn't in her prime. Sorry. When a woman is considered to be in her prime in her 20s and 30s and maybe 40s.
What are you talking about?
That's not according to me.
Prime for what?
It depends. I mean, it's just like prime. If you look it up, if you Google when is a woman in her prime, it'll say 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Thank you, Don, for saying what everybody truly believes. He later said he regrets his comment, calling it inartful. All right, Dana, I have been suffering from CNN anorexia. Ever since they got rid of Stelter and Cuomo, I have nothing on my show. I have segments that are just empty. And thank you. Thank you, Don Lemon. Do you think he did this deliberately because his shows are tanking? He's all of his, no one watches it. Maybe people are going to watch him now because he says more idiotic.
There was a suggestion, I saw a headline somewhere that said, yes, that it's so bad over there in the morning that it has become must-watch TV because you can't believe what you're actually seeing. It's that bad, like a train wreck. Mm-hmm. We were just getting ready to do Newsroom this morning, and I'm looking at my phone, of course, and I see Janice Dean put that on Instagram, and I said, surely not. What an, you know, and then I said a word that I'd probably get in trouble for, and probably more than he'll get in trouble for saying this. And the visceral reaction was interesting for me, so I'll be the same age as Nikki Haley in a couple months. And my initial reaction was like, just rage. Mm-hmm. Like, and I said a word.
Oh, did you?
That was like even stronger than any word
I've ever said. What did it rhyme with?
Fuck.
Oh, wow.
I was mad. Mm-hmm. And also I was like, it's one thing to say that I think that was an inartful, it wasn't just an inartful, it was a ridiculous comment. But it was interesting, the rage. And I did wonder, well, any of the women's groups stand up and say anything?
Yes.
Will Hillary Clinton come out and say, oi, how dare you?
Mm-hmm.
Women are in their leadership prime and in their power prime. And no, none of them did it. The View didn't say anything, nothing.
Artificial stance.
Okay.
Don Lemon is a brave man, and I'll tell you why. Every now and then, Jesse, you know this, you're sitting before the screen, you go, you have something comes into your head. And you go, should I jump off this cliff or not? He was comparing reproduction to cognitive function.
Yep.
He went past your prime. They're talking about cognitive function. And he goes, past your prime. And his brain's working. And he goes, reproduction. I know they're different, but this could be great. You've been there. But he was trying to do you, Jesse, and he failed.
But he'd even
never
Googled
try
it.
To do Jesse.
Yes. Only you could do Jesse.
Only I can do Jesse. And Jesse would say, if I was doing Jesse, he would say women are in their prime in their late teens. That's
Jesse.
That's Jesse doing Jesse.
That's Jesse doing Jesse. Doing Jesse.
Doing Jesse. See what I just did there?
Yeah,
so most people when they do these shows, and I speak for myself,
clearly
prepare.
Yeah.
He knows what he's going to say going into the segment.
Right.
So he had prepared something to say. And this is what Don had prepared to say.
Right.
He had actually, maybe did he not research it? Maybe.
Because
if
Googling.
You do Google
he
it.
No, he said, he told people to Google.
Or if you do Google it, it doesn't say that. It's much later. So I want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Why?
Yeah, why?
He wouldn't do that to anybody.
Fine,
here.
Screw him.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, though, I always accept an apology, Jessica, you know? And also because I want him to stick around because it helps my show.
But did he actually apologize?
He said it was inartful.
He regretted it.
Yeah.
That's not an apology.
Is it? Well, I don't know. I didn't read it.
I regret. Doesn't mean I'm sorry.
It. Oh, okay.
I have it.
It counts. His PR person wrote it. It counts.
Exactly.
Again,
exactly.
It doesn't.
But it doesn't count. With people,
mm-hmm.
right? So he ticked.
With people.
So does it count?
People,
who does it count with?
With Chris Licht, I guess. With the boss there, right? He said, you have to say something. So he said, I'm going to say the least personal thing that I can say, which is so divorced from reality. He stared a woman in her late 20s and a woman in her 30s in the eye. Caitlin Collins and Poppy Harlow, I think those are the very, or Caitlin Collins might be 30 40. Now.
So I think she's like, I'm
whatever 40, it is.
Whatever.
I don't see
and
it.
You don't see, well.
Or race.
No.
No one said anything about race.
Just see gender.
Okay.
You're saying it's because he's black? Jeez, Jessica.
Oh, man.
He stared at two high-achieving women that he shares this job with, that he was demoted for, right, and is hanging on by a thread, and decided to insult women and women that they inevitably admire, right? If they don't like Nikki Haley, they sure like a lot of politicians who have been in their 50s, 60s, 70s and been successful, like the Hillary Clintons of the world, insulting Ruth Bader Ginsburg, all of it. And it made me think back to when he said to S.E. Cupp, when she confused two numbers, she was on a show and he was on the 10 o'clock hour, and he goes, oh, is that mommy brain?
Right.
Like that she short circuits now because she's given birth.
And I hate it when I do that.
It's horrible.
It's an insult to moms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Judge.
Okay, so what he said, in addition to saying that, that Haley isn't in her prime, he said, be careful about turning off older voters. I mean, the guy isn't even listening to himself as he trashes women who are over 40. He says, be careful about trashing the older voters. First of all, he did Google it. He said he Googled it, 20, 30, and 40. And then he takes it back 7 hours later. He says, I regret it. Age doesn't define you professionally or personally. But the truth is, I mean, that this guy would actually go out there and trash women and say, you're only in your prime. How dumb do you have to be to say something like that? I mean, think about who talks like that anymore. And Kamala Harris, I'm sure if she heard about it, she would have said something about it.
She should have just done it anyway.
But that would have been,
you know what? That would have been great if she had done something.
But the thing is, he made this choice of comparing reproduction to cognitive function.
Yeah.
It's like technically he was right in his twisted brain that it's like, oh, once you're past childbirth, you're past your prime. But that's the way he was thinking.
He didn't connect the two.
No.
He absolutely didn't connect them.
So entertaining. Thank you, Don.
Yes.
I'm going to do this again tomorrow on my show just for you.
I'm never watching Fox and Friends again. I'm on CNN every morning.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to click to subscribe to the Fox News YouTube page. This is the only way that I know for sure that you're not going to miss any great commentary, any great news bites, any great interviews coming your way on Fox. You can get it all here on YouTube. So subscribe right now.
Coming up next is a Saturday interview that Alex had with Jay Dyer and his wife, Jamie Hanshaw. And it had very, very insightful parts of it. I'm just going to play just some of the beginning parts here until the end of the program. And so I'll put up embedded his total interview with this couple, husband and wife. And boy, they're sharp. But anyway, you'll be able to listen to the whole 1.5 hours, nearly 2 hours, a program that they had, but I'm just going to put the first 15-20 minutes up right now, and then I'll have a click off on there embedded for you to see the whole thing. But thank you for viewing and listening to thesecrettruth.com, and we certainly appreciate each and every one of you. God bless you. And here we go with Alex and Jay Dyer and Jamie Hanshaw, his wife.
If you have any discernment, you look at that and you go, that is a psychotic.
Who do you think is hotter, Brad Pitt or Bill Gates, Jamie, as a female?
I like nerds, so.
So you like Bill Gates?
Yeah. No. What?
Oh, come on. what I'm saying is Brad Pitt comes off as like the guy next door. Like as a nice guy. Or who else would come off as like a guy next
Tom
door?
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, Tom Hanks kind of comes off as a guy next door. Or there's so many people that come off as a guy next door. I mean, you look at this guy, he just radiates evil, in my view.
Yeah, all these global elites do. I mean, when you look at Kissinger, you look at Brzezinski, you look at David Rockefeller.
That's another question. Schwab is Dr. Evil. Why is he their spokesperson?
Well, what they want to do is bring about, you know, you've talked about this, the externalization of the hierarchy where they can openly worship the beast and have everybody also worship the beast. And this goes back to what they want to bring about, a new Babylon, a new Egypt, a new golden age of...
A new satanic age,
yes.
Basically, yeah. You rid the earth of those that are unworthy, the profane, and, you know, the strong go into the future, which is actually not really the strong. It's just these sort of really...
Deceivers.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamie, let's walk that back. You say you like nerds, but you don't like Bill Gates.
No.
I mean, he's ready to star in the new Lord of the Rings as Gollum. No makeup needed.
I just like smart men, I guess I should say.
Well, with Bill Gates, his software wasn't even that good. He was just good at getting major funding and screwing over his competitors.
Yeah, and he comes from, I think, his family involved in the deep state for a long time, military-industrial complex.
Dad, head of the Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood, yeah, that's his background, you know, hardcore eugenicist, 100% open about it for many, many years. So, you know, this just represents one of these faces and figures of the establishment that's working very clearly in tandem with all of these other entities, including China. There's a lot of collusion there, obviously, to set up what they see as the future model, which is the synthesis between Western capitalism, Eastern communism, which the Chinese communist system is that perfect version of a synthesis between East and West from the Cold War. That's the model they'd like to see for a future global technocratic governance.
What do you make of the split between the Anglo-American establishment and China? How real is it?
I think it's a oligarchical grappling, like you talked about with Jack Prosoba yesterday. I would agree with his analysis that you've got, you know, the OSS, the CIA, they train Mao's guerrillas. They set up what we know of as modern China. The Royal Society was very instrumental in setting that up, moving our industry to China. And then eventually, as happens with a lot of the people that the West aids and sets up, there's this period where they tend to want to kind of not do what the biddings of the Anglo-American establishment want. And that can either lead to a managed dialectic conflict, or it can lead to them being toppled. It could lead to all kinds of different things. So I see it as like an organized crime figures kind of battling out for, again, who will control the new world order.
So it's a turf battle.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to break with a very important report by Greg Reese on predictive programming, then a short report on body snatchers. It's an allegory of what happens to the public when they go into this mass illusion. We're going to come back, and I am going to be quiet for as long as you guys want to go. We can take another break and come back after that. But I'm going to come back and give you guys the floor to go start at the beginning, start the current times, the future. You got a lot of books, a lot of documents. You got a bunch of cue cards. So when we come back, at least an hour and 20 minutes or more of uncensored, raw info. And, folks, the enemy has been battling to keep us from getting out. There's all these ideologies and all these fake systems. We're covering how the world really works. We're going off the true rulers that are almost in total control and now in control of your body. And so this isn't some liberal or conservative or some weird populist movement or some side deal, most of which they control. This is average people analyzing the globalists and saying, hey, I can study what you do. I can now oppose you. And so I'm not calling for my own master blueprint for the world like Elon Musk is. He's challenging the globalists right now in his own turf battle, saying he wants his own system. What if we all have a debate about, hey, not what football team we're rooting for, which distracts us with that same militant enthusiasm energy, tribal energy, but what if we have a discussion about what we want for the future of humanity and our children? We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with our special guest.
In the movie Knowing, the news reported a major oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Tonight in the Gulf of Mexico, an explosion on a soon-to-be decommissioned oil rig triggered a fire which burned for 3 hours before it was extinguished. Officials don't yet know the exact cause of the explosion, but believe a malfunction in the cooling system may have been at fault. Due to the prompt response of the rescue unit, the structure was evacuated with no loss of life.
A year later, the Deepwater Horizon exploded. 6 months before 9/11, a Lone Gunman episode showed us the World Trade Center being targeted by a hijacked passenger plane.
Corner of Liberty in Washington. Lower Manhattan.
World Trade Center. I'm going to crash the plane into the World Trade Center.
And last year's film, White Noise, was about a train wreck that poisons a small town in Ohio. This is the very same story now playing out in real life. Within a year of White Noise's release, the actual event occurs in real life, in Ohio, in Texas, and in Michigan. This is known as predictive programming, and its purpose is to psychologically trick the minds of the masses into accepting major traumatic events that would otherwise be resisted. In the book Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, Michael Hoffman describes a mind control technique known as the revelation of the method. And he writes that when the revelation of the method is performed in a veiled manner, accompanied by certain occult signs and symbolic words, and elicits no meaningful response of opposition or resistance from the target, it is one of the most efficacious techniques of psychological warfare and mind rape. Sarah Elkhaldi of the Alchemist YouTube channel does an excellent job of explaining all this. According to Elkhaldi, there is a law of nature in this universe that compels the dark occult to first gain our consent before trespassing against us. because they believe this protects them from the natural laws of cause and effect. They offered, and we accepted, so it's all fair. A lack of response to an action is often taken as an approval of that action. And there is an old Latin proverb that says, "He who is silent when he ought to have spoken and was able to is taken to agree." Silence is considered by many to be a form of consent. And so it is through a veiled performance of the revelation of the method technique that these dark occultists believe they are gaining our consent, what we know as predictive programming. With predictive programming, the minds of the masses are impregnated with visuals of a major event before it happens. This is done through all forms of media and can be very subtle so that nobody notices. But the subconscious mind notices everything and can easily be programmed through repetition. And so these controllers repeat whatever it is that they want us to accept as reality. Because these images are delivered to us through entertainment, they elicit no meaningful response of opposition or resistance, and so we accept them subconsciously. And when the event happens in real life, it is already familiar and acceptable to us, as if that's just the way it is. It's a mind trick, and it works by keeping everyone locked in a spectator state. This causes what is known as paradigm blindness, which is when a person is incapable of seeing any reality other than what they've already been exposed to by the media. This paradigm blindness will cause a person to get emotionally triggered whenever confronted with an alternative point of view that they have not been programmed to accept. It's a very powerful mind trick, and the solution is quite simple. We need to stop living as spectators of someone else's reality. We need to start creating our own reality. And we need to remember how to say no, because they offer it to us and we accept it.
This program contains language and sequences some viewers may find disturbing.
The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread, and the military apparatus of this country is about to be handed over to scum, or beholden to scum, Russian scum.
Please listen. If you don't, if you won't, if you fail to understand, then the same incredible terror that's menacing me will strike at you!
The function of all life is survival. Sleep. Sleep. Sleep.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Lock the door. Lock the door.
They're coming! They're coming! Help! Help! They're coming! They're coming! Listen to me! Listen! Help me! You're next, please! Please! You're next! They're in danger! Please, listen to me! Something terrible! Please! You're next! Here they are! They're already here! Help! You're next! They're coming! They're coming!
Sleep. The seed is planted. Sleep. Sleep. Terror grows.
Elizabeth, wake up! Get you when you sleep! Sit up!
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
All of a sudden, they're growing like parasites. Is it contagious?
Mom, free all the homies.
It looked right at me.
You need to get out.
You're looking at it as if it was human. It was not human.
Now, the classic fear begins to grow.
We're being cornered.
In a modern masterpiece of science fiction.
They're barricading the street.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
And Jamie Henshaw, Jay Dyer. And now we're going to get into their presentation on the New World Order, the system, what it's doing. But since we aired that little report from Friday, that important report by Greg Reese on predictive programming, people will watch the few examples he used and say, oh, that's just people covering things that are probably going to happen anyways. And of course it is, but Chris Carter later told me and told others that he was approached by the CIA for that Lone Gunman episode, for this element the CIA hijacks a jumbo jet to fly at the World Trade Center and blame it on Afghanistan to launch a new war. And there's so many examples, so we know this does indeed go on. Not all examples are what's happening, but everybody's seen it for themselves. You guys want to comment on predictive programming, and then where do you want to get started here now that we've set the table?
Well, we have taken our show on the road, and now we do a live show. And in that show, I give a talk called The All-Seeing AI. And when you said you wanted the history of the New World Order, I said this is exactly what he's looking for, because my talk begins in ancient Mesopotamia. And the first cities that we know of, it's a pagan overview of history, so it's very bleak, it's very gross and barbaric. But the first cities, Babylon, Akkad, Uruk, those things were actually cults to the ancient gods, and they believed that the gods resided in the city. And the priest class served the gods, and the people served the priest class, so it was a very stratified culture. and one of the most interesting goddesses of this time was Inanna, and she was a gender-bending goddess, so she was worshipped by cross-dressing, by ritual public sex, which was the legitimacy of the kingship that ruled over these cities. They would have festivals called Akitu festivals, where they would the king would copulate with the goddess in public, and they would worship in this way. And the tales of these gods and goddesses were interesting because they weren't benevolent, they weren't all-knowing, they weren't all-loving, they were warlike. The only thing they had was advanced technology and eternal life, basically. And then this goes into Plato, if you want to mention that.
Well, please continue with your I mean, I want to hear what he has to say, but this is interesting.
Okay. So, let's see. Talking about Inanna and Babylon. So, Sumer also was one of these cities. So, Inanna was a Promethean character in that the stories say that she brought down the aspects of civilization that make an empire, thrones, priesthoods, fire, and then you have Gilgamesh, who was like the first celebrity. He was two-thirds god, and his preoccupation was with eternal life. The tales of him was that he would require all the virgins to sleep with him on their wedding night. So they appealed to the gods, and they created this Bigfoot beast man for Gilgamesh to wrestle with called Enkidu, so he would leave them alone. So these are just the heroes of antiquity that became like our Superman tales of today, right? Inanna Ishtar is associated with lions, so that's where you get the lions on the gates of Babylon. That's where you get Lion's Gate of Hollywood. That's a studio that is responsible for movies like Saw and Hunger Games. So when you see that Lion's Gate logo, you know you're in for a trauma. She's, like I said, a Luciferian Promethean character because she brought fire to the city. And let's see, what else?
So these are controlled structures and mechanisms, right? Like these are structures for how to control empires through ideologies and through secret societies, which is what Plato talks about.
Yes, and this is why transgender and gender bending is so important today, because this is what she represented in the ancient times. It says she had the power to change men into women and women into men.
Nothing new under the sun. It's the same kind of degeneracy that's part of the enslavement of the masses.
And whether you believe in God, the devil, any of that, or aliens came out and did this, this is being repeated in cultures totally separated from each other, and they're all obsessed with living forever, and they're all obsessed. But then Noah, along comes the whole Judaic idea, says no to this. God's mad. We've been mixing the seed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that mixing of, you know, the hybridization idea, which is like species shouldn't be blended. You shouldn't have, you have these biological limitations, and all of this is about breaking down those boundaries that are instilled in nature.
Well, there's no doubt they're bringing back the ancient. It's like Ghostbusters. A cult builds a building as a psychic temple to bring in these energies. That real building is in San Antonio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll show it to you, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, well, it's built like a lightning rod to attract, right, spiritual forces, right?
Well, and also Freemasonry plays into this heavily. But I was going to say the